afternoon and welcome to Family First with five-time author and top speaker Randy Rolfe. Your family may be facing a variety of issues that you'd like addressed. No two families in the world face identical problems, but Randy has seen almost all of the difficulties families today face, and she and her expert guests have the answers that you seek. Now, here is your host, Randy Rolfe.
Welcome to Family First. I'm your host, Randy Rolfe, and I'm really excited about today's show. And thank you to all our listeners. We have over 32,000 listeners, and we just started the show last May. So thank you very much, and thank you to our sponsors, and we're always looking for more sponsors. Today, we're going to be talking about the practical side of spirituality, and I'm very excited to talk to our guest, who's an international star in the spiritual teaching. So today it's so easy to get caught up in the day-to-day preoccupations of work, bills, family events, public affairs, sports interests, and more. It seems hard to find time to meditate, relax, or participate in the more enduring aspects of life, the spiritual connection between us all and also with our surroundings. My guest, Tony Samara, is a world-renowned spiritual teacher who believes that becoming more aware of the spiritual element in life right now can help with all those other concerns and bring more peace and joy to everyday family life. On Family First, Tony will share his insights on how we are living at a crucial moment in humanity's transformation, and we can no longer wait for someone else or something else to do something to make life better. He'll explain how the creative power of each individual allows us to put things into practice now in a more proactive and participatory way. So listen for his valuable wisdom that you'll hear in this hour to help make our lives freer, more fun, and more meaningful. Before I introduce Tony, I want to tell you a little more about his background. It's quite impressive. He's author of four books so far, Shaman's Wisdom, From the Heart, Different Yet the Same, and Deeper Than Words. And the titles tell a lot right there. He was born in England and grew up in Egypt and also in Norway, where he discovered the Zen Buddhist philosophy. This led him to the Mount Baldy Zen Center in California, where he studied the teachings of, and I'm going to crucify this name, Kyazan Yoshu Sasaki. To explore further the essence of spirituality, he visited shamanic communities around the globe, including in the Amazon River region, one of the most wilderness traditional communities on earth, and the Andes Mountains. Centered now in Germany and Europe, his spiritual teaching attracts people from around the world and also through the internet. His purpose is to encourage all to lead their daily lives actively in a noble way in order to realize the evolution of human consciousness, joy, and real freedom. Unlike some spiritual teachers, Tony teaches that food and eating are fundamental to our inner well-being. Healthy, energized food helps us to create a strong foundation that allows inner work and transformation to take place. So that holistic attitude, I thought, could really benefit families that are listening. So welcome, Tony. I'm so glad to have you on the show.
Thank you. I'm happy to be speaking to you and your many listeners today.
Thank you. So I'd like to start by asking you, how did you first become interested in following a spiritual path? What's your personal journey to this awakening?
It's difficult to really pinpoint the exact reason, but I think we're all born to be more open to spirituality than we think. You know, it's just that we have a label, spirituality means this or means that, and we think being spiritual means being different from what we really are. And I think children today and young people are getting more in touch with themselves, which means that they're more spiritual. And that is exactly what happened to me. You know, I was just aware that there is a deeper meaning to life than just living out the basic needs that human beings have, you know, a survival-type living of having enough food and comfort and what have you, wasn't really satisfying to the depth of who I am. And I think that is the case with every human being, you know, when they realize that there is more to life than just what we think and what we see around us, then we become spiritual. I did have a few experiences that made me look more deeply into life, and like every other child, you know, there is some good and some bad aspects of growing up as a child, and that makes you think more deeply if you're inclined that way. So, you know, that was my reason for looking more deeply into what is the true meaning of life, why am I here? And once you ask that question, you know, it remains there, and you have to follow the path till you get to some sort of understanding. And I asked many questions as a young child, you know, why? And in the end, I feel that I've found some of those answers. It leads to more questions, but at least the original questions have been answered.
That's beautiful. Having children myself, I really felt that children from the beginning have that sense, and culturally, sometimes they lose it, but many of them will keep asking those questions, and it will lead them to a deeper sense of purpose in life. So I was fascinated by how many different cultures you've visited and studied, different traditions. So I wanted to ask you to share a bit about those different experiences and how they've added to your understanding of how to truly practice the daily life of staying in touch with that awareness and consciousness. So wherever you want to start, in England or Egypt or Norway?
Well, I was born in England. But I left very early. I left when I was two. My family were diplomats, and they worked around different parts of the world, and especially in the Middle East. So I was exposed to interesting ideas and ways of living that probably, you know, we only see on TV or read about in books. And there was a sort of multicultural background that made me look at experience and the way we understand the world around us in a very different perspective than just growing up in a place where you're told, or children are told, you know, this is the way the world is. And I realize that people see the world in different ways, but in essence, we are all human beings. So in essence, we have a core that connects us to everything. And it was fascinating to grow up in Egypt, where I spent most of my childhood, simply because the extremeness of life there makes you really question everything. You know, I saw poverty, I saw wealth, I saw happiness and sadness and all sorts of things as a very young child, but in a real sense, not just on TV. And it really made me question things. You know, why is the world the way it is? And that led me to the fascination to explore further, you know, why is the world the way it is, and how is it over there, and what is the world like in a different place than where I am. And so it gave me the incentive to travel and to explore, not just in a sort of touristic sort of way, but more in an in-depth way. How do people see and understand the world from those different perspectives that, you know, the world is today? You know, there are so many interesting cultural beliefs and social systems that we forget are a reality, and a very real reality for other people, and that they see things and understand the world in a different way, just like children. You know, they understand the world so differently than adults, and we often forget that that is a reality. So I was fascinated by anthropology and social science and how to look at things in a way that gave me more understanding of the world and more understanding of myself.
That makes so much sense, Tony. My parents were, one was a doctor and the other was a sociologist, but I always say they were amateur anthropologists. They took us abroad every summer, and we did spend a summer in Egypt, and I'll never forget, we got stuck taking a train. The train broke down, and we were stuck for a couple of hours by this little village that hadn't changed in 2,000 years. People were pulling their water up out of the ground and going into little underground huts. And you know, it's just so instructive to actually see other cultures. And it's beautiful that you've been able to teach this internationally, the kind of insight you got from those communities.
One thing I learned, you know, is that, you know, there is no way that we can be dogmatic about our belief systems, and that freedom is much more of value than trying to push people to see or understand the world in a specific way. And like you said, you know, when you see people living in such a different way, then we know that there are so many perspectives to truth.
Yes, that I love that focus on freedom, just actually being free in spirit and in life. Can you share some of your experiences studying the shamanic systems in the Amazon and the Andes? That was the very first place I went when I was just 9, and it changed my life to see. I wasn't doing the in-depth kind of study with the shamans that you were, but just being in those environments that had nothing to do with the modern world, it was really fascinating. So can you share a little bit more about what you found among the shamans?
Of course. You know, my driving force was that I studied marine biology at university, and the interest was to find a place in the world that was not polluted by just man-made things, that was as natural as possible. So, you know, for me, that was the rainforest, and I understood that the rainforest was being destroyed at a very rapid rate at
yes.
that time, and I wanted to do something, you know, and so decided to travel to those parts of the world without really knowing that I was going to be getting in touch with a shamanic culture. You know, that wasn't my intention. It was mainly to actually help people, but I realized that, you know, sometimes when we think we want to help others, that we need more help ourselves. And I realized that when I was there, that it was more that the people there were showing me a way of living that was forgotten by the modern world today. And I realized that there is such wisdom in some parts of the world that are now slowly disappearing from, you know, humanity's awareness and the way they understand nature and how they harmoniously interact with all the elements of nature is forgotten in cities and in modern living. And so I learned a lot. It was quite an experience because it's not an easy lifestyle, especially for me. You know, I was not used to that lifestyle. It's very, not primitive, but very different. You know, comforts are not really the number one thing when you travel to those parts of the world. But there is so much more that fascinates that it's hard to really explain all in a few sentences. And this is why, you know, I started writing about my experiences, because there is just so much to explain. You know, people live a life that is so different, how they treat children, how they focus on creativity and intelligence that is slightly different from, you know, just the intelligence of trying to work or get a very well-paid job and pay your mortgages and, you know, survive in society as we do today. It's a different type of intelligence that makes people realize that the forest has natural medicine that is spectacular, very, very useful for today's diseases, a spectacular way of living that is hard to explain in words, really.
Yes, I understand that a lot of your teaching is by example, which is really the only teacher for children. So your book, Shaman's Wisdom, goes into this in more detail of how, what you observed of the lives of the people you visited.
Yes.
Very wonderful.
Very much. And
good.
It speaks about things that are not just relevant to the native people, but also relevant to, I feel, modern society, you know, things that we've forgotten that we can apply here now in this world that will help us to connect to the power of nature and the power of the universe in a way that is quite easy. It sounds difficult, but it's quite easy and possible without having to go all the way to the Amazon forest, because, you know, these fundamental laws of nature are applicable wherever you are. You don't have to be in a specific place or be a specific type of person to apply them to create more joy in your life. And I think it is very important to start, if you have a family, to start with children and, you know, the fundaments that create joy for a child now, you know. And I think parents and communities can apply this knowledge in a joyous way. And the book is quite simple, you know. It's not an anthropological book. It's written so that anyone can read it and enjoy it. And I think very easy to put into practice.
Wonderful. You mentioned how they treat children, that it's with a different spirit. And when I'm trying to guide parents to make their life more joyful and more effective with their children, I always think back on the basics of natural living, as if we were still in a village. And so I'm delighted you really noticed there was a real difference with the way they involve their children in their daily lives, in a way that that's hard to do in a modern American or European home.
For sure. And, you know, the problem then is that we have to deal with children who grow up frustrated because they're unable to express or communicate their depth as children. And so they spend so many years searching when they're older, or getting caught in the confusion of the modern world because they are not, you know, so secure within themselves or don't know themselves so well, that they have to then do this when they're older. And this is why it's so important, because we face a major transformation, you know, at the moment. The world is facing, I feel, a crisis in on many levels. And, you know, the children of the future, I feel, will help to resolve this if we are able to create an environment where they are able to use intelligence in a different way than just the basic survival that is part of today's paradigm.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolf has answers to your questions about family matters, whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance. Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolf has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RandyRolfe.com. Your family will thank you.
Hi, I'm Neil Haley, host of the Total Education Network. We're the only education talk show that airs shows 7 days a week on different stations. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org to learn about the exciting shows coming to the network. The show brings the total education experience. We interview interesting guests, have lively debates, and provide news and provide tips for parents. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org for more information. Remember, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators, TotalTutor.org.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolf@randyrolf.com. Now, back to Family First.
We're with Tony Samara on Family First, and we're discussing how spirituality can really inform your daily life. And he's traveled all over the world, studying in various parts of the world, and being inspired by the multitude of different views of life. And I love, earlier he said that spirituality is not something separate from daily life. It refers to the deeper meaning of everyday life. So, Tony, I wanted to ask you what you think is the biggest challenge for people in the world today relating to the deeper parts of life, the spiritual life.
I think that's a very good question. If I was to choose one thing, I would say that people need to let go of a lot. And I call this unschooling, you know, unschooling all the knowledge that we think is so relevant and important to come back to a very free perspective of understanding wisdom. And the problem with the mind is that the mind is similar to the ego. It always wants to be a step ahead of even wisdom and takes over, controls the whole perspective of everything. So we never really understand because we don't have enough time to be still and listen to the wisdom come up naturally. We're always, you know, there with a perspective or a view or a belief system or a picture that colors the whole situation in a way that prevents wisdom from speaking directly from the heart. So I would say letting go. We know how difficult it is to let go if, you know, we are in a relationship, for example, and there's a lack of communication on some level. We know that to get to an honest aspect of that relationship takes a lot of work. And I feel that's the second step, you know, not only letting go, but being honest and realizing that there is a lot of work to do that, and it can be quite joyous if we do it in a way that is open to realizing that freedom is the ultimate goal of every human being. So rather than controlling life, if we allow life to flow in a free way, there is so many rewards that we can't really understand from the limited perspective that prevents us from seeing wisdom.
Oh, that's beautifully put. It makes so much sense. I love that you assert that it's our natural state to be in joy and bliss and wisdom. But for us, unfortunately, it takes some work to get there, and letting go is such a powerful concept. And unschooling is a good name for it, because so much of the education that we're given in modern world tends to remove us from our inner wisdom. So,
yes, that was the first thing I learned sitting in a Zen Buddhist monastery. That, you know, before even trying to understand anything, we have to let go of what we feel creates understanding. And, you know, that whole letting go process is meditation, you know, so that we come to a deeper perspective of intelligence. And then we realize that, you know, the mind is not a bad thing, but a limited mind can create such journeys of pain and suffering, and that it's better to come back to our original nature, which I feel is that freedom. But it is a work to discover it, yes.
Yes. So, where do you find your most receptive audiences? I'm curious. is it among the young or the old, or the overworked middle class, or where do you find your most receptive audiences, Tony, to your work?
It's difficult to say, because actually there are people from every age group and every sort of background. Work-wise, culturally, you know, there are people from every part of the world. But I would say that perhaps if people have had an experience where they see that there is perhaps something more to life than what is obvious right in the beginning, then there is a deeper receptive sort of open attitude towards what I'm saying, because the search is already underway, so to speak. And, you know, when you're open to searching more deeply, then, of course, you begin to listen to the guidelines of how to find that, you know, within yourself and also through reading and through other people's journeys and art and creativity and music and spirituality. It all becomes very relevant, only if you're open to, you know, seeing it in that way. So I find people who are very dogmatic or have a very strong belief system get upset with what I say, because, you know, I'm not saying, you know, do this and it has to be A, B, C, and that is the answer to everything. It's much more complex what I say, and so people get upset and sometimes take it as oversimplistic, you know, that life is more complex and it can't be put in such simple terms as to just change belief system or let go of old belief systems that prevent the reality from being more open to oneself. I don't know if I can answer that question, really. I would say that there are many, many people who are around 25 to 35 that begin to question life and so get attracted to the teachings.
Well, what I'm hearing you say is that it's a very individual journey, and it may come from a personal experience. And one of my goals is to help people realize that if they're feeling uncomfortable, it's much more productive to search than to go for some medication to hide from their feelings, and this kind of search can be so rewarding, and you do make it simple but not easy, as they say.
Yes, and I do feel that people don't realize how how many people use medication, you know, from simple medication such as taking some sleeping tablets because, you know, they are too stressed to come to a more relaxed state and sleep, to, you know, all sorts of medication. And if children were to learn, and if young people at school today were to learn simply how to meditate, which is a very simple technique, I think that one would be amazed as to the effect it would have on people later on in life, just as eating healthy food makes a big difference. To your health, I think meditation makes a big difference, not only to your health, but also to your mental and emotional state, and how to deal with that later on in life when things get more complex.
Yeah, speaking of more complex, the recent acceleration of communication and information at the tip of your fingers and people's email and Facebook, how do you see that affecting people's perception of their lives?
Well, I find technology fascinating, but at the same time, too addictive. And it's like anything, you know, people can get so lost in technology. I know people now communicating about all sorts of things that really don't need much communication. You know, I've seen people on their mobile phones sort of calling about what sort of ingredients are needed for a meal and going shopping and, you know, communicating backwards and forwards about irrelevant things. And so I think, you know, society becomes too focused on external communication via email and Facebook and phones and what have you, so that the communication becomes overdone and people are just, they get too burdened by the amount of information that happens, that the brain somehow closes to the relevant information, because the brain just closes, says this is too much, and doesn't want to process more information. And I feel that, you know, we need, what would you call it, technology detoxes. where, you know, we just don't have all these gadgets constantly blaring their sirens at us and requiring our attention all the time, especially if it has no relevance. You know, and today people make relevance out of so many irrelevant things, you know, and Facebook, I don't know, you know, perhaps it's useful to a point, but, you know, so many people spend too much time, just like TV, doing things that later on you don't even remember why or, you know, the reason why you spent so much time on such such things. And it's not wrong. It's just that we forget then what is really of value in life. And, you know, there are so many other more interesting things that can be part of one's life. But it's not as exciting, you know. I see that people who are addicted to technology find that, you know, simple things in life then become boring because they just don't have the ability to value everything in the same way because, you know, the speeding up of the mind, the speeding up of everything means that, you know, you have to be flowing on a different rhythm than the natural rhythm that is part of being a human being. So I'm not against technology. I find it fascinating, and, you know, the reason why we're speaking now to each other is because of technology. But if it's a focused attention to realizing what you need and then letting it go, you know, not using all your time to be connected to everything, then I think technology is useful to a point. But people today are just too caught up in too many things, and it's a pity because life is very precious and time goes very quickly.
Yes, it seems especially for young people, that in some ways they act as if their life isn't quite real unless they've posted it to someone else. And that's very frightening to me because of the things that you're sharing, that sitting with yourself and listening for the deeper wisdom can be so much more joyful than feeling like you have to tell everybody what you did today, or it's not going to feel like it really happened.
Yes, and, you know, if you're constantly in the future, where you have to communicate from that perspective, then you forget to live in this moment. And in this moment, you don't have to say, you know, what you've done in the past or what you're going to do in the future. You just have to be. And I think that is something that young people today have forgotten, and everyone, you know, we have forgotten how to just be. And that doesn't mean just sitting and doing nothing, because, you know, some people believe that is the old way of seeing things, that, you know, to be means that you have to go somewhere away from civilization and just sit and do nothing, and that is being. But actually, people who do that sometimes have a mind that is so quick and so busy that they are unable to sit and be because their mind hasn't detoxed from, you know, all the information that has been processed throughout their lives. And they, when they sit down, they, you know, they have to learn to let it all go so that they can come back to that natural flow of what it means to be a human being. And I don't think you have to do that. I think you can do that anywhere. You know, a mother, a father, a post office worker, who, whatever you are doing in this moment, you know, you can add some more knowledge to the way of living that is obvious to everyone. And that knowledge is the connection of the flow that happens in the heart, which, you know, can be done while you are cooking or washing clothes or, you know, just driving. You know, it's such an easy addition to knowledge and the way of living today that I think it would enhance everyone's life if one was able to add those interesting techniques to one's life.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense. I know many people feel like the traditional groups that you visited, that it would be boring to live that way, but they take so much, they're so involved in the now, in weaving a basket or watching their children play in the woods. It's beautiful, and I think they seem quite happy and much less stressed than we do in the modern urban situation.
Exactly. sorry. But I think that it's possible, even in the modern situation that we live today, it's possible to be happy if we're more connected to what is really going on. But the mind tends to just jump ahead of itself and, you know, lives in a way that pulls us away from the joy of living in this moment. So it doesn't mean that we have to, you know, go back to weaving baskets, and there's nothing wrong with doing that. But I think, you know, we can add a few new perspectives to life that help us to then enjoy everything that we're doing much, much more. Even the simple tasks or the difficult tasks become more joyous. It's just a matter of coming back to a flow that is not realized today.
That's great. And we're coming up on a break, Tony, and I want to explore that some more, of how specifically a family can do that, can integrate this deeper awareness into their daily lives. So please keep listening to Tony Samara, international spiritual teacher and author of Shaman's Wisdom from the Heart and Different Yet the Same and Deeper Than Words.
Which guests are being featured this week. Read our network press releases and read the blog posts from your favorite hosts. Go to iradioblog.com today, powered by the Voice America Talk Radio Network.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters. Whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance, Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RANDYROLFE.com. Your family will thank you.
Hi, I'm Neil Haley, host of the Total Education Network. We're the only education talk show that airs shows 7 days a week on different stations. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org to learn about the exciting shows coming to the network. The show brings the total education experience. We interview interesting guests, have lively debates, and provide news and provide tips for parents. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org for more information. Remember, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators, TotalTutor.org.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back. We're talking about the practical side of spirituality with Tony Samara, who's an internationally known spiritual teacher and author of a number of books, and basically following the Zen Buddhist philosophy, but he studied in many different shamanic traditions, and has really come down to an exciting core that really informs our daily life, that even if we live in the suburbs of Philadelphia, like I do, or the outside San Francisco, we can still have a spiritual awareness in everything we do. So I want to talk about that, Tony, about how can a family reconnect with these basic elements of the deeper world of spirit and growing consciousness.
Yes, I feel that the first step is, you know, just being aware that that is possible. You know, our belief system is essential in making reality happen. And, you know, most people always have a negative, oh, no, I'm too busy, or, gosh, you know, there's just too much to do, or my life is focused elsewhere, to have such a belief system that life can be much more than what it is now, you know, that we can touch aspects of ourselves that are beyond what is happening now. You know, people just get too comfortable sometimes with what they know, and the unknown becomes too scary to explore. But if we believe that the unknown is possible to touch upon and open up to, then I think that is a major step. And, you know, when a family does that, or when a small community of people, like-minded people do that, there is a whole thing that is set in motion that is much more than the sum of the parts. You know, it's a dynamic movement that happens. And family constellations that, for example, hold on to limited belief systems can change very dramatically if one or two members of the family believe that something is possible. We've seen this, you know, in interesting fairy tales and stories, how one or two, you know, parents or children can change so much for so many people. And I think that is a belief system. We know, for example, Nelson Mandela, you know, believed in a dream, and a lot happened to all that was around him to make that dream not only possible but quite viable. So once we believe that something is possible, then I think we have to have the courage and the strength to put that belief system into practice. And that doesn't mean, you know, that if things don't work out the first time, that we think, okay, why put it into practice anymore? So then the third thing is discipline, you know, so not just putting things into practice, but believing that you have to put it into practice over and over and over again until you touch upon that wisdom that is there. And, you know, those three qualities that I've just mentioned are not very obvious to people in a practical sense, not so obvious to people in the world today. You know, we give up too quickly. We don't believe in ourselves. We rather believe that we're victims or that things are not possible because of whatever. And definitely there is no discipline, because discipline is boring. You know, we're having to do the same thing over and over again, like meditation or really looking at things in a different way. You know, for most people, you know, it's easier to turn the TV on and do something that is more relaxing. But then, you know, when you come to that perspective that the value of life has intrinsic value in itself, then we don't want to waste any precious moment. And knowing that, then those three qualities become very easy to apply in any sense. You know, for example, you were mentioning food. I feel that changing our food habits and our food addictions and our food neurosis, you know, on some perspective helps the spiritual path, because, you know, it's the foundation of many things. So, you know, spirituality is not applied just in an esoteric way, but rather, you know, in a practical way in daily life and living situations. Food, the way we communicate to our partner, the way we communicate to ourselves, the way we walk, the way we hold our body, the way we breathe, the way we look at the world, you know, how we see the world, the colors and the depth and the amazing quality that is all around us. Do we see it, or are we so busy in our mind that, you know, we don't even have the possibility to realize what is around because we're so caught up in one perspective. You know, all these things are practical, everyday ways of living spirituality in action.
That makes so much sense, Tony. I know I really was drawn to your emphasis on eating properly and well and taking time to honor that whole experience. And I read an interesting study actually years ago where it surprised everybody that the time we think of traditional communities spending so much time gathering food and preparing it and serving it, and at that, and we have this idea that their whole life is around finding their food. And then they interviewed people in a modern urban society, Western society, and when they did the numbers, they found out that a typical American was working just as many hours for their food. They were working at a job to buy the money, to earn the money, to go to the store, to bring it home, and they actually spent about as much time getting their food, only it was a completely different set of activities, but it was the same amount of time to feed the family. And it's such a core function that we do as part of the natural world, and so I really appreciate that's an area where family can recognize that deeper side of who we are. Does that make sense?
Of course. And you know, food is joy, you know, and to look after your body that helps you to feel and live life in a healthy and wonderful way that the body does, you know, it's a temple that needs to not only be looked after but honored in a way that is joyous. And so, you know, one of the basic things is that, you know, do you actually enjoy eating, or are you eating just because your mind wants something? You know, does it come out of desire, or does it come from actual joy of experience? And most people today, especially in the West, you know, as you say, we're so busy that I've seen people sort of eating on the run, so to speak, you know, because they're so busy, you know, they have to do three or four things, you know. I've seen this in airports, and yeah, you know, people are busy trying to get a plane and just eating whatever, pizza or burger. And do they actually enjoy the food? You know, I don't know. And in, today, even, you know, when people sit around a table, you know, are they eating anything that is really good for them, or are they just eating old belief systems and what they're used to or what they've been told to do just because they don't have the creativity to go beyond it? So I'm not for a dogmatic, you know, this is what you need to eat, or you have, healthy means eating in this way, rather changing the attitude about food. And I think once you change the attitude about food, you drop a lot of unhealthy food from your diet just because it doesn't feel good.
Yes, I think that's so true. And I know sometimes I encounter people who feel that what they eat doesn't matter because their mind is set right, and that mind body connection and the spirit. I love that you say it works the other way too, that your body feeds your mind, which gives you the power and the energy to think well as well. So
exactly, and your actions reflect your mind.
Exactly. So, how did you come to focus on that that physical spiritual feedback mechanism? It's often left out when people talk about spirituality.
Yeah, for me, I was unwell as a child, so you know, it was a natural way of exploring what can I do to feel better, and what can I do to change my physical health. And the number one thing that you can do is, you know, just change whatever feeds the physical body to be unhealthy. And I realized that my parents, loving as they were, just didn't understand what healthy food meant. You know, they just understood it from the perspective that they'd learned. And so I had to explore and read up about health and experiment on myself, basically, to find out what worked. And I think that is an interesting thing to do, for people to explore food. So interesting what people eat around the world, the different ways of eating and the different foods that people eat. And it's an amazing way of then finding out that, you know, each body type has a requirement that creates a sense of well-being. And I found what makes me healthy, and my sense of well-being definitely changed to the better. So I feel that it's possible with many people today. And especially, you know, if mothers have children that are hyper, or, you know, situations where there is aggression in family constellations, you know, we know that food has a major, very strong effect on these things. And, you know, it can be quite simple to change your diet so that the emotional state of people around you and your physical well-being changes. And I've seen it happen many, many, many times. I think it's part of spirituality. I mean, every spiritual teacher that I know of has spoken about food not just being something that we need to eat, but actually being a sacred aspect of living. And that, you know, once that sacredness is honored in a real sense, where there is joy and there is a sense of freedom, then food becomes a spiritual practice.
Yes, so in your daily life, accepting that all of our healthy activities are sacred, that we can stay in that space. It's not something we just do on Sundays or a few minutes a day. It can be a way of life.
Exactly. And, you know, when you enjoy something, then there is no problem in practicing that all the time.
Yes, yes. You have the pleasure pain principle working
exactly.
For you.
Yes.
We just have a few minutes left. It goes so quickly. But I wanted to be sure people knew how to learn more about your work and where they can get your books and what your schedule might be if you're traveling to their part of the world.
Okay. I mean, the easiest way to find out more information is to go to www.tonysamara.org, and that website is in many languages and has a resource page which has the books, the many books that you mentioned, that one can order from amazon.com or amazon.co.uk. And yes, there is also a Facebook page and a Facebook fan page and a group page, and also there's an interesting, what I call satsangs, which interesting talks that are available on tonysamara.tv, iTunes, Sounds Orange. It's everywhere, really. If you search the internet, Tony Samara, you'll find all sorts of interesting connections. And different people have different interests. So, you know, there are many topics covered from children to food to meditation.
That's wonderful. I think you also have something on YouTube as well. So
yes,
I encourage
exactly.
Listeners. And Tony is T-O-N-Y, and Samara is S-A-M-A-R-A. So do seek out more information about Tony. And do you have any last
yes.
tips or insights that you'd like to share before we close?
Yes, I would say, you know, some people think the word meditation is scary, but, you know, meditation for me is just taking a deep breath and breathing out three times as long as breathing in, so that, you know, the breath is prolonged. And to practice that in every situation that seems stressful, and to see what happens as a result of just coming back to your center before reacting to a situation, that is meditation in action.
Oh, that's a wonderful tool, and that would work in any relationship in the family or
exactly.
any stressful
before you
moment.
React to your partner or to someone in the family, take a deep breath and just see, you know, what is really going on.
Well, thank you so much, Tony Samara, the international spiritual teacher of many wonderful experiences, and do seek out his wisdom. Thank you so much for being our guest on Family First, Tony.
Thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed Family First. Please tune in to our program every Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time, to join your host, Randy Rolfe, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. The weekend is here. Enjoy it with your family. And we hope to see you here next week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.